නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස බුද්ධං ධම්මං සංඝං නමස්සාමි. So we are coming to the end of the Vasa, almost the end of the Vasa. I think maybe over 2 weeks, yes. So ending of something. Well, when I think of ending of things, a phrase that comes to my mind is Anicchavata Sankara. I mean, growing up in Sri Lanka, it's something whenever there's a death in the suburbs, they put a banner and then on the banner they write Anicchavata Sankara. So I could always relate that phrase with death. That's how I connected it. But as I grow older, now I know it has much more deeper meaning as well. About to understand the word sankhara, yes, it's the death of the body. That's how it was used. In funeral houses. So it's ending and putting things down. That's how I see it now. To be able to put things down, not carry them around. And that kind of ending. Well, I think that's in one sense very peaceful, to be able to put things down and end things. There's a flavor of joy, I think, to be able to end. So anyway, that's why, I mean, the world, everything gets old and die. And the teachings is about there's no need for a Tathagata to come to this world if there is no aging and death. Because everything will be all fine, isn't it? And everything stays the same. So there's no need for a Tathagata to come to this world. The Tathagata comes to this world because of aging and death. And so in that sense, I'm very grateful that there are many Buddhas, that a Buddha comes to this world. Buddha is the only one who teaches the escape from aging and death. I mean, we have many teachers from the day we were born, we were taught. Starting from our parents, I mean, definitely I do have much gratitude and appreciate that education, the parents being our first teachers, and much gratitude to that. I do appreciate that very much. But all that teaching, all the teachers we had in school, that was for their worldly teachings. Yes, they have helped me a lot to live the life, this life, in a good way. Yes, all that has been very helpful. Yes, we need those worldly teachers to live the life in a good way. But the real teacher is Tathagata, because he's the only one who teaches us how to overcome old age and death. How to stop this long journey in samsara. Not to be born again and again. So he is the teacher, you know, the greatest teacher that one can have. And so we are so grateful that we have these teachings. And not many people have heard it. So the fact that it's still here, so I feel very grateful that, and have a lot of gratitude for Buddha for that reason. That's that kind of faith. So faith can arise in many different ways. I mean, we do have idols, you know, film stars, sports people. We have faith in them because we hold them as our idols because they do play the sport very well, or they're great actors and actresses. So we have that faith can arise because of that, because they play well, the sports people play well. But that's faith is arisen out of a feeling. It's a kind of a feeling one has. Because this person is performing well. And as soon as that performance is lost, we lose the faith as well, because it's born out of this feeling of, because we chase the feelings, and that faith has arisen, born out of this feeling. But faith through understanding, that is, faith in Buddha's teachings is a very different thing. Faith in Buddha is something very different, I feel. The quality of faith, the sadha, which is considered a faculty and a power, and that faith is very different. It's faith arisen through understanding, the teachings, that is. And that faith is the one that turns into wisdom, because it's a true understanding of the Buddha's teachings. If we have faith in Buddha, and if we have faith in the Dhamma, and this understanding that comes, the faith that comes out of this understanding of the teachings, is true faith, it's unshakable. And that faith is different to a faith that arisen out of a feeling of seeing somebody doing something well. So talking about the four teachings of the Buddha, that is this, this roaming we do in samsara, bring a teaching from the Buddha. It's about Ratthapala. It's from the Ratthapala Sutta. Anyway, he was very young, and he was in worldly sense very successful. He had everything going in his. In a good way, in a worldly sense, he was very successful, but he renounced the world. And the king of that area where he was living. I don't remember all the details. But so when Ratapala renounced the world at a young age, and because he has given up everything he had, because he had everything going for him, so the queen kind of questioned him. He wanted to test this young man who has renounced the world, whether he's really, what's the reason for him, this person who had everything in the world, to give it all up and lead a life of a samana. So he was questioned by the king, and the Ratapala was very wise, and he gave the reasons for his renouncing the world. They're called four summaries. And the first one being, the world is swept by, which means, you know, it's I think these four summaries explain the true existence, the nature of true existence. And it's the first one being, the world is swept by aging and death, because nothing stays the same. Relationships change. Our bodies change. And that's the true nature. And the world is swept by change, old age, and death. So that's the first summary. And the second summary being, there's no protector of the world. There's no overseer. That is, nobody can escape from this aging and death. How powerful, how rich one is, even the most famous or most powerful person in this world, can't escape sickness and death. So there's no protector or overseer of this world. And the third one being, the world is futile. The world has no ownership. That is, we are just temporary custodians of everything we own, isn't it? These bodies, everything we own, we leave them behind when we die. So we are temporary custodians. Everything is futile. There's no a sense in it, what we own. And the last one, the last summary being, the world is incomplete because we are slaves to craving. The insatiable craving, and the craving we have, it's insatiable because nothing can satisfy us. We have, you know, people have we do start a small business and then end up making it bigger and bigger and bigger, thinking it will make us happy, make everyone happy. But that's the true nature. The world is, you know, kings or countries fight for land, thinking having more land will make us powerful. So the world is incomplete. Nothing can make us complete. So these are the four summaries. He explained to the king. He said, that's why I renounced the world. He had this understanding at a young age. And how do we cope with this? I mean, it's true, these four summaries. It's we are swept by aging and sickness. I think, well, I'm experiencing it. We are very much experiencing it, that in this community as well. And how to have be able to deal with it in a mindful way. We have to accept the change because there's nothing we can do apart from accepting it and having enough mindfulness to be able to live with that, this aging business. So it's developing the mindfulness to be able to accept this changing nature. Nobody can escape this. We are swept by it, each one of us. We are all brothers and sisters in old age, sickness and death. And the second summary being there's no protector, that's something very much the Dhamma can help us, because there's no external security. And these teachings are a wisdom teaching. And the whole idea of these teachings is for us to have the faith and the confidence and develop that inner confidence and faith, because that's the only thing that will help us, having that inner confidence and faith. That will brighten the mind, that inner confidence and faith. So there is no kind of external security or external protector. We have to do it ourselves. This is a kind of a DIY teaching, isn't it? Do-it-yourself teaching. The teachings are there, and if we develop that ability to understand these teachings, that faith and confidence that's developed within oneself, that's the only protector we have. That's the only thing that will help us. There's no external security. We may have mothers and fathers and teachers and so-called companions, but in the end, we are all alone, you know, when it comes to dealing with this life, dealing with this mind, this body. I have to find my own devices to work with it. So it is very much a internal, that security one needs is, so there's no protector, simply. So that's the second summary. That's a true existence. We need to develop our own self-confidence, the faith, and that's our only security. And the third one being how futile everything is, because we don't own anything, you know. We don't possess anything. We are just temporary custodians. We never take anything we have, the material possessions. We have to leave them behind when we die. Of course, we can enjoy them while we are alive. But we are not the owners. So that will make us understand, having these cravings and attachments, what it does, you know. It makes us understand what these cravings and attachments do. Because nothing we own in material sense, we never take them with us when we die. But at least the material qualities we develop, that we can rely on in our sansaric journey. So that's been the third summary. And the fourth one being how incomplete the world is, you know. It's this insatiable thirst, the craving we have, chasing feelings one after the other, because we are we really are attached to these feelings we have. And to see how much we get attached to these feelings, how much we get blown by these feelings that arise within oneself. And be able to see how incomplete this world is. That's the world we live in, through these senses. Nothing can satisfy us. We want more and more. Whatever we see, whatever we hear, I like to have a bit more of that. To develop contentment with what we have, how much we have. Unless we develop contentment, whenever we see or hear things, I want to do that, or I like to, I heard this is so good, I will try it. Because we think that that will bring us happiness. Because that contentment is something which is one has to develop. And having contentment, of course, maybe if we are contented, maybe we are not looking for other things, constantly looking for something other than what we have. Well, these four summaries, when you think of it, that really, if we follow those four summaries, and it's the teachings of the Buddha, that leads to dispassion, isn't it? It's dispassion is not, you know, being emotionally dead or cold. It's dispassion is being able to understand craving and attachment, to be able to overcome craving and attachment through understanding. That's dispassion, you know, not being burnt by lust and ill will, you know, burnt by lust or burnt by ill will. So really, if when you think of those four summaries, it can lead to dispassion, and that will stop this burning of lust and be not be burnt by lust and be burnt by ill will. I mean, we chant the fire sermon quite regularly, so that's what the fire sermon is all about. The eye is burning, the ear is burning, the nose, the tongue, the body and the mind, they're all burning. It's burning with greed, hatred and delusion. So to empty the eye and the empty the ear, the empty the nose, the empty the empty the tongue, the body and the mind, empty off, emptying it off any sense impressions, you know, not being, not getting attached to anything, the form, the sound, the the form, the sound, the smell, the taste, the touch, and the ideas, not get attached to these things, so that these six sense doors are empty of those attachments. So when we chant that, you know, I know we do chant it regularly as something I do like, you know, just saying it's burning, you know, that much is enough. That there is burning happening with greed, hatred and delusion. So the dispassion is the one that helps us to understand delusion, really. And these, I feel these four summaries will really help us to understand the true existence and be able to develop dispassion, disenchantment, or nibbida, you know, that is in Pali. And it's freeing oneself from, I know the word dispassion might feel that it's emotionally dead. Not really. It's a kind of freedom that one gains by overcoming the craving, the chasing we do with the craving and attachment. How that burning is can be overcome through dispassion. So that, how do we put this into practice then? You know, there's this kind of a teaching which says knowing and understanding, three kinds of knowing and understanding. It is in Pali, it's parinya. I mean, parinya is understanding. When we chant the Dhammacakka, we use that parinya yanti. So from that phrase, from that Pali word parinya is understanding. It's called nata parinya, tirana parinya, and pahana parinya. So three ways of knowing and understanding. That is, the first is knowing what has arisen in the mind, that is, knowing that something unwholesome has arisen in the mind. Could be ill will, longing, covetousness, jealousy. So it's first thing to do is knowing that it has arisen in the mind. To know that it has arisen in the mind, one has to have the right view. Only if one has right view that we know whether it's wholesome or unwholesome. So with the establishing of right view, one knows at that time that something unwholesome has arisen. So that's the basic knowing. That's the first knowing, knowing that, or the understanding or the knowing, whatever word to be used, that this unwholesome thing has arisen in the mind. And once that knowing, after that knowing that this has arisen in the mind, the next kind of knowing and understanding is making a clear decision, be very decisive that this unwholesome thing has, I do not cultivate these unwholesome things. I do cultivate the wholesome. Having that decisive making it very decisive, having a firm decision. I'm not following the unwholesome, but I'm following the wholesome. Making that clear decision. This is all. This is the, you know, this goes very well with the second summary, because there is no protector in the world. We have to find it ourselves, the inner security that can be created. So we have to have this decision. We know what has arisen. We have to make this clear decision. This is unwholesome. And I do not follow the unwholesome. I endeavor to follow the wholesome. So once that decision has been made, the last one is the third knowing or the understanding is, once those two has been understood, that unwholesome has arisen and clear decision has been made that I need to do something about this unwholesome, the third one is the abandoning. The unwholesome must be abandoned. And how is this abandoning happening? So we need to abandon this unwholesome thing that has arisen, whatever it is, ill will, jealousy, lust, anger. So Buddha has given us so many medicines, isn't it? In the Buddha's teachings, there are so many medicines to be able to abandon this unwholesome thing that has arisen. Because we've clearly understood that this is an unwholesome thing that has arisen. And we have made a clear decision, I'm not following this. And the third one being, now how do I abandon this? That's where the medicine is useful. That is, if it's longing for an object, seeing the true nature of that object, seeing the repulsive nature of the object, if it's greediness for food, seeing the repulsiveness of the food, and the impermanent nature of the object, if you're longing for an object, because that was clearly explained by the four summaries. So reflecting like that, at that stage, when it comes to the stage of abandoning, if we can reflect in that way, reflecting the repulsive nature or the impermanent nature, and seeing that it has no ownership, you know, we can't own anything. By reflecting like that, we are able to let go of that thing that has arisen, isn't it? That's how we abandon things, let go of things. Seeing the true nature according to the four summaries, or by establishing right view. And that's what the meditation and does, that reflective, contemplative nature. It's not that meditation like sitting on the cushion, but that reflective, contemplative nature is there in all of us, in all human beings. And that thinking capacity we have, put it into good use, that reflective thinking capacity, not discursive thinking, but the reflective, contemplative thinking. And that's a knowledge part. You know, if we train ourselves to think in that way, it's a kind of a knowledge part we develop within our psyche, which we can use it over and over again. in living life, so that how the Dhamma can be used in day-to-day life. That's how Dhamma can be so useful in living this life, living in communities, living in families, in workplaces. So the Dhamma can be very alive in day-to-day activities, developing that kind of mindfulness and seeing things as they are. Well, that's how the faith can arise in Buddha's teachings, and faith is the one that turns into wisdom, that kind of faith. Well, I can close now by, reminds me of a, it's in the Dhammapada as well, that the moon lights during in the night, the sun lights during the day, the fire lights during day and night. Wisdom dispels the darkness in the mind, the ignorance. That is the true light, the light of wisdom. And that's the only one that helps us to overcome the darkness in the mind, the darkness of ignorance. So, I wish you all well. Thank you for your attention and wish you all well.